Welcome, everybody. I'm Patty Whipler. I'm the founder and the program director at Hand in Hand Parenting. And with me tonight is my good friend Larry Cohen, Dr. Lawrence J. Cohen, who is the author of Playful Parenting. He's the author of The Art of Roughhousing. He's the author of Best Friend's Worst Enemies, a book about, children and friendship. He has spoken widely throughout the United States and in many countries in Europe. And his Playful Parenting book has been translated into, I know, Romanian and I think Hungarian. And what other languages, yeah. Larry? Spanish?
I think it's up to about 14 now. So
Italian
and French and Chinese and Polish and Dutch and Spanish. So exciting.
Congratulations. It is a wonderful book. Larry is just wonderful. I love how he thinks. I love how clearly he speaks to us as parents and how much compassion he carries. And he is the father of two. And so welcome, Larry. We're really honored to have you with us.
Thanks, Patty. It's always such a pleasure and just to be part of what you built and what you continue to build and the impact that you have and the, all the lives touched and all the ripples from it. So it's a real great pleasure.
Thanks.
So shall I just dive in?
People are still pouring in and I'd like to give a little 3 minute, two or three minute, rundown of Hand in Hand, who we are for people who haven't connected with us before, and then it'll be your turn. So we've got something like, 550 people signed up for this teleseminar tonight. So we want them to be here when Larry starts. So I'm just going to say that this is Hand in Hand Parenting. Our intention is to support you as a parent, to give you the tools and the perspective that you need so that although parenting is hard and there are surely, many hurdles to deal with every day, what we want to do is to be able to support you well enough that you can put your head down on your pillow at night and know that you did well with your children, that you really connected with them, and that that they're going to be turning out just fine because you knew that connection was right at the heart of parenting and because you had tools to connect. So that's our idea. We do this through talks like this, free talks like this. We do this through online classes, in-person classes, parent consultations, self-guided videos, lots of blog posts of parents who've had successes solving problems small and large with our listening tools. And, we try to make it possible for parents to find us, to get to us, and get services that really make a difference, without money at all. But we love to personally connect with parents and personally, give you our, all the mistakes that we made and kind of going in and learning parenting by connection. We can help you, make fewer, because we've been there. So all of our instructors are parents. Almost all of us have faced very difficult situations in our parenting, and we're here to help. We're here to make a difference. So, and that's why we asked Larry to come, because he's really one of the bright lights in the world of parenting children, building connection, and being compassionate in the process. So I'm going to turn the teleseminar over to you, Larry.
Great. Thanks so much, Patty. Well, here's the first and most important thing that I want to say to all of you listening, which is you're not in trouble. You can't see me, but I have on my you're not in trouble smile. and I'm happy with you. I'm happy that you're here. Did you do wrong and mess up and make mistakes? Probably so. Welcome to the club. Getting back on our feet does not mean denying that we did hurtful things and lived out of line with how we want to be. Maybe in the past, maybe 10 minutes ago, maybe again tomorrow. And it's okay because it has to be okay, you know, because this is the reality. And it's not how to never mess up. It's what to do after, because we will. And we will because it's hard. Because it's extremely hard and there's no training, and well, there's lots of training and a lot of it's not useful. So we got a lot of training in parenthood from growing up. Some of it was useful for us now and some of it not so much. And it's all mushed in there together. And so sometimes what comes out of our mouths is the less useful parts. We're also, it's hard because children grow up and we figure something out and it's not relevant anymore. You know, you get that diapering down and then they're out of diapers. And, and then especially because we're trying to do something new. I think everybody on this call is really, understanding that tools like hand in hand tools and like playful parenting stuff that I talk about, they are deep tools and they're not learned instantly and quickly. And it means swimming against the current. Often when, you know, if we're lucky, we have a community of support of people around who are sharing this, way of parenting but a lot of us have some people who are, you know, questioning or critical. And then most of us have that questioning and critical thing in our own heads. So we're going to talk more about that tonight. You know, I want you to know that I've messed up. You know, I didn't tell Patty I was going to ask her if she ever messed up, but.
Oh my God. Let me name the ways.
Right. I was going to get your sons on the phone if you denied it, but.
No.
Fortunately, yeah. Fortunately for me, I've heard it. I've heard it too. Fortunately, Emma's in Africa without a cell phone right now, so I can't get her on to tell the stories. But no, I'm not just saying that. You know, I've had terrible regrets, painful regrets and self-recrimination about things that I've done or things that I haven't done. And it's a terrible feeling to mess up about something that's so important to us. It's such a painful feeling. But actually, it's a good sign that we feel terrible about it. I know it might sound strange because what's so good about feeling terrible? But that bad feeling, that painful feeling, the guilt and remorse and regret, sure, it beats us up and pounds us and we don't need so much of it. But it's a sign that we're living out of line with our deepest values. And if we didn't care, if it didn't matter to us, we wouldn't care. And if we can get past just the I'm bad and look at the, okay, I feel so bad about this. What does it mean? What does it say about what's important to me? What are those values? What are my goals? We can clarify those and galvanize them and really move forward. But before I want to talk about that, I wanted to just ask you to think for a minute about how do you want to respond when your children mess up? Okay, I know your children do, because they all do. And not how do you respond, but how do you want to respond? So let's just think, you know.
Do you want people to answer?
Maybe a couple. Yeah, let's hear a couple.
Okay.
How would you want to respond?
Yeah, if you want me to call on you so you can tell us what you're thinking, let's start you. Okay. All right. Someone from Grass Valley. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Erin, and the way that I would want to respond, first of all, I want to say I don't ever feel like my kids mess up. I just feel like there are different choices that could be made.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that I would like to address that with my kids is to physically get to down to their level. So maybe come down to where, how tall they are and put my hands on their shoulders or put their hands in my hands and give them my eyes and just let them know that I'm right here and it's okay. I don't want them to feel like they did something wrong or they did something bad. And then for us to maybe just have a sweet connection there and then talk about it after I kind of feel like they have let go of their fear of being in trouble.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Someone from Kansas? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hello. My name is Margit. And I'm, hello. Yeah, thanks for this call. This is awesome. Yeah, my sense about wanting to, you know, recognize when they've messed up is also like acknowledging that it's something different, wanting to get to a better place of accepting that difference of approach, and then to be really listening to, you know, the inner sort of wherever they're coming from, if it's fear or the uncertainty about it, like just to let them know that they're okay, they're being a kid, to see it as just a normal part of who they are, and that's okay. We all have to learn through mistakes.
Thank you.
Great.
You got one more, Larry?
Yeah, one more.
Okay. I can't tell where you're from, but you pressed star 2, so go ahead. Hello? It's someone calling in from Skype. No? Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah. So these are beautiful, and you will recognize what you just heard. You're going to hear it again in a minute. So I'm glad you said it. That in addition, what I would add to this, I think this is where to start. The connection first, the understanding first, the okay, normal first. And in addition, if they've done something that is, you know, violating a, you know, moral guideline or a safety something, that we want them to know what they've done, and if it's wrong, we want them to know it's wrong, and we want them to understand why. We want them to help make it right. I think we want them to have a tinge of remorse, but not a ton of bricks of remorse. And we don't need perfection, you know. They don't have to get it right the very first time. And this is, you know, all of Patty's work, all the things that I've learned from her and tried to share with parents is that the harshness that we are working so hard to avoid with our children, that goes for you too. That even when you don't deserve it, right? And I say that in quotes, you know, and with a little bit of a smile, like, because of course you always deserve it, you know, and it's the same for our children, right? We want to be compassionate and loving and connecting and understanding them even when somebody might say, well, they don't deserve love and affection right now. That goes for you too. And if that feels like a surprise or like a strange idea that could go for you too, then I'm glad you're here, right? Because I think, and you're not alone, because I think a lot of us lack that inner voice of admiration and compassion, that we weren't just loaded up and loaded up and loaded up with that. We might have gotten a lot of good things, but a lot of us are specifically maybe didn't get enough of that. You're still totally lovable, welcome, part of the family, part of the community of the world, even then, even when you did X,
whatever that is. And if we don't have that inner voice ready at hand, we can build it. That's the good news. It would be lovely if we didn't have to do that work, but we can build it, and it actually is quite incredible to do that process of building it. And so this is not something to do in 5 minutes, obviously, but I'd like to leave us on a 5-minute version of that. So here's how it works. So you've messed up and you feel terrible. What do you need? So I'm not going to ask for anybody to say it now, so just think it. What do you need? And not a kick, okay? I don't usually think, say there's a wrong answer, but that's the wrong answer to what do you need. You don't need a kick. What do you need to hear? And here's a hint. What we all need is something compassionate. And not just compassion, along with somebody who's not forgetting that you also deserve a lot of admiration in addition to compassion right here where you messed up. You deserve admiration for lots of other things and maybe even some aspects of this spot too. So we start with a gesture of kindness and heartfeltness, like maybe a hand on your heart. Or a butterfly hug, which is you cross your arms across your chest and you alternate patting one shoulder and the other shoulder. A little gentle butterfly hug. A hand on the heart, just a warm, gentle hand, or a pat, 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 or I like pretending I have a baby in my arms and doing that pat, pat, pat. Not burp the baby so hard, but comfort the baby, pat, pat, pat. So take a minute and just do that gesture. Don't just think about it, but actually do that gesture. And add in some words and keep it simple, okay? Oh, honey. Okay? And Patty, I'd love to ask you to model the tone of voice of this because, when I hear you use this tone of voice, I just melt, so.
They're like, oh, come here. Come
oh,
here.
Yeah.
There's another tone of voice that I really like. It's,
oops. Mm-hmm. Oops. Oh, yeah.
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 Or, yeah. My grandchildren used to like me to say,
uh-oh, SpaghettiO. Mm, mm. Yep. So this is a matter, we don't all have that tone of voice ready at hand. I'm guessing that you, through a crucible of fire, you developed that voice, right? I'm guessing it had elements that you got growing up, but then a lot of elements that you figured out along the way and you practiced.
Yeah.
I know that's how it's been for me. And oh, come here. Oh, honey. Oops. And I'm going to add in these two that we heard before. It's okay. It's normal. We learn from mistakes. It's not bad. You're not bad. Let's have a sweet connection before we do anything else. I want to know where you're coming from. This feeling of messing up is a moment of suffering, and suffering is a part of life. So may I be kind to myself in this moment. May I give myself the compassion I need. It's going to be okay. This can be made right. I think there's such a fear when we care about our children so much as we all do, and we care about parenting, we're trying so hard, and we mess up. We have that fear it will never be made right. And the fact is, it can be made right. And our connection can be restored. And this is not an individual suffering. You feel this. We're often very alone with this. Most of us do not share these moments with other people, with our friends and family and loved ones, with other parents who all look like they all have it all together. But the fact is, this is a shared suffering. This is our common humanity. That it seems to be our nature to reach high and fall short. And this is, and to feel bad about it, which is kind of amazing. And so back to that gesture, pat, pat, pat. Oh, honey. Oh, come on. Come here. I mean, come here. Gather it in. And to gather in and welcome everything we're feeling. This is one of the most important things. I think more and more the heart of something really new and different in parenting that's going to make an enormous difference in the world is welcoming every feeling that our children have. And most of us did not have our feelings all welcomed when we were growing up. In order to welcome our children's feelings, we have to welcome our own. That there's no such thing as a bad feeling. Embrace them all with tenderness. They feel guilty. Oh, you're feeling guilty about that. I want to kill them. I'm so enraged. Oh, yeah, you want to kill them. We're afraid to welcome these feelings because that will mean bad, bad things will happen. In fact, we welcome them and good things happen. So I'd love if anybody is willing to or interested in it to, if you want to hit star two and just a, you know, a comment or two on what you noticed. Just doing that a couple of minutes.
Okay, someone from Tucson, go ahead. If you just
Hi there. I was just calling to say, one thing that's hard for me is when my older child is misbehaving or, you know, making bad choices and really doing something that seems awful and the younger child is seeing it, and so I tend to stress really harshly, so sort of, you know, which I want to stop, but it feels in that moment so difficult to be compassionate and gentle with his mistake and misbehavior because my two-year-old is seeing it and emulating everything he does. So it tends to feel more stressful at that moment. I tend to really, you know, be really harsh with my voice and everything. So.
Yeah, so what happens if you try to be gentle with yourself there before you even think about them?
Yeah, I mean, I can feel how that would shift things.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Great. Anyone else?
Okay, someone from San Diego. Go ahead. If you just press star two, it's your turn. You can talk.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, no.
We're getting a lot of feedback.
Hello?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
So
I would just second, what the other mother said too, is that's where I end up having a lot of feelings, and it's harder to deal when I have my older son or he hits my younger daughter for no apparent reason, something happens. And so it's harder to react and if you have any examples about that, I love the idea of, you know, taking a step for myself. It's a little hard, harder said than done. I don't know actually how I would practice that when I see my daughter getting, you know, kind of pummeled over by my son.
Right.
I'd love your
any
feedback on that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes. And I just want to keep coming back to not skipping the step. You know, we're going to talk about how to intervene better. But and how to calm ourselves down in the moment. But yeah, I just think it's crucial not to skip to, oh, I have to do the right thing. I have to know what's the right thing to do and do it. Because that, if there's a way we're skipping the gentleness, tenderness with ourselves, then it's going to be really hard to be effective and to be gentle with them in a way that's really effective. So,
one of the things that I do when I'm listening to parents, Larry, is to just, you know, have them say something like, you know, I have the most aggressive boy in town. You can really wail. You know, and just to kind of turn it around, it's like we feel ashamed, we feel like we've done a bad job, but just to kind of brag.
Yeah.
It lets a little laughter come through, and it I don't know, it's just kind of a little bit of jujitsu on, oh my God, you know, what have I done? You know, how could I possibly have a kid like this? Every older brother and sister is actually a kid like that. It's not you, but
right.
Deciding to be, you know, pleased with your child, like you've just won. He's just won a medal. Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't change the behavior, but it's, you know, it changes what goes on in your mind.
Yeah. And I think that's a great entry point to talking about listening partnerships, because you just mentioned, like, you know, when you're listening to parents, offering this new perspective. And so if you think about what would it be like for someone to listen to you in that compassionate way as often as you needed it, so that you have that voice in your own head and you have that voice from a live human being in front of you or on the phone. And so, you know, because that is the essence of listening partnerships, which is one of the key tools of Hand in Hand, maybe you can say a bit about it, Patty.
Sure, I'd like to. We have 5 listening tools, and one of them is for us as parents. The others are for us to connect with our children, but none of them work very well unless we get some help. I think our assumption is that, you know, every parent is already doing 140% of what's possible for them towards their child. And if they're going to change or, you know, be more compassionate or intervene with less harshness, something new and good has to be happening in their life. And what we offer is the idea of partnering up with another parent who also really cares about what they're doing, and listening to one another, taking turns listening. So it's first my turn, and I take like half an hour, and I tell you all about what's on my mind and what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I've tried, what has worked, what hasn't worked at all, what I worry about, and I notice how my feelings are. And, you know, as I get to know you and as you don't interrupt me and as you pay me warm and respectful attention, slowly but surely, I can actually offload the emotion that I carry, especially during heated moments. And then after you listen to me, then I listen to you. And I do the same. I don't interrupt. I don't give any advice whatsoever. I care about you. I put as much warmth into myself as I can. I say very little, and I honor your intelligence and honor your ability to sort your own situation through. And I sort of, if I nudge at all, I'm going to nudge in the direction of if you begin crying, trying to help you keep on going. Because what's missing for parents is the chance to offload the emotional tension that we, of course, have because we love our kids so much and life is unruly. So we get upset about it, we get worried, we get surprised, we get shocked, we get overwhelmed, and there's feelings that go with almost every little thing that our children do all day. And those feelings, you know, if you stop them up, they can muck up the works, you know, pretty quickly. If you have a listening partner that listens to you once a week and then you listen to them, then their life begins to go better and they learn a whole lot from what you're saying, without advising you. without you telling them anything, and then you learn a lot from the story of their life and how their feelings work. And slowly but surely, trust builds, and all I can say is it changes your life. Having a listening partner changes your life as a parent. It's a tremendous relief. It's also scary. It's scary to actually say what you're really thinking, just to name the feelings that you have, because there's a lot of feelings that we've been told were unacceptable, and we probably have every feeling that it's possible for a human being to have, we parents, because life is big and there's a lot of it when you're with young children. So, but being able to laugh, being able to cry, being able to have our own tantrum and our own little fits of rage, or big ones, not just little ones, being able to tremble if we're feeling really scared, something scary has happened, that those are all the signs that emotional release is happening, and our minds are getting unburdened. Like, you let the feelings out and you find you have more space for your children, or you have a better perspective on your problems. And sometimes it changes things very quickly, and other times it's like it's little, step by step. If you're trying to change a big dynamic in your family or in your own way of dealing with your children, it's two steps forward and then one step back. You blow up and you didn't mean to, but there it was, and you go back and in general we're working on, the things that happen to us. It's like we blow up at our children because our parents blew up at us. And when we can't think, out comes the behavior that was kind of imprinted on us. When we can think, we can choose not to do that behavior, but garbage in, garbage out. So, our parents were beyond, garbage went in on us or on our brothers and sisters, and we were scared to death. And then when we can't think, it's garbage out. And so what listening partnerships do is it puts love and respect in, and what comes out of us then is more love and respect for our children, because we have some place to go with. The heat of the moment, it doesn't, we have a person to tell about the heat of the moment, and then the moment doesn't get so heated. So that's the essence of listening partnership.
That's beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, sorry to interrupt you. I've heard you talk about this so many times, but this is new to me, this phrase about, you bring in the love and respect in, and then that's what's going to come out. And so, Patty, this is incredible. How much does it cost? It must be cost a fortune.
It costs a little bit of time and a phone call.
Oh.
or a drive over to someone wonderful house. You don't even need to be of the same background, or I don't know. You're not making a friend in a certain way. You're not, you don't go to get a cup of tea. They don't make you cookies.
Yeah.
You don't invite them to your birthday party. You don't owe them anything. You just listen to one another. If you have a friend already, you can try doing a listening partnership with that friend and continue your friendship. But it's an uncomplicated way to get and give help. And you learn at least as much as you get. I think that's the other thing is we have so much we can learn from one another just in listening, just in finding out why people feel the way they feel, what happens to somebody to make them feel a certain way, what happens to us to make us assume that no one's on our side, or to make us explode at our children, what happens to us to make us unable to see that the child who's hitting the other one is still a good child. There's stuff that happens to us that makes it, makes us bend in that direction, and we can unbend ourselves if someone will just listen to what it was that happened.
And I think the I don't know what to do, because these two comments that we heard, this stuff happens and I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great starting point in a listening partnership. And
yep.
It's very different than going to somebody to ask them what to do and they tell you.
Yeah.
Which is often not as helpful as you'd think. But I don't know what to do. And instead of, oh, here's what to do, what you get back is, oh, that sounds painful. What's that like? is, oh, I can't stand not knowing what to do, and everything I do that goes backwards, and we just get clearer about what to do, and it comes from deep inside.
Yeah.
It comes from our deepest values, and I really think that the reason that we feel bad when we do is because we've gotten out of sync with our deepest values. And the way to get back in sync with our deepest values, there's the, you know, the biggest part of it is what you were describing, Patty, about offloading the emotions that are in our way with a caring person who's listening and not telling us that we're wrong and not telling us what to do.
Yeah.
And then the other part is being clear about what those values are. Instead of kicking ourselves, it's, okay, what is the positive value that I want to live by? Right? So my older child hits my younger child for no reason out of the blue, and I don't know what to do about it. Well, why does that bother me? Right? That's the next question, is not what do I do about it? I kind of think we're not ready for that yet. Right? The next question is, I mean, sometimes we have to put the fire out, right? But really the next question is, why does that get me? What does it say about what's important to me? You know, does it mean that love and connection is important? Does it mean that sibling closeness is important? Does it mean that peace and nonviolence is important? What's the value here? What's the thing to live by? And to keep going with that. So let's say it's peace and harmony or peace and love. You know, what's the history of that? All values that are important to us have a rich, rich history. And when we focus, like a lot of parenting and parenting advice is all about focusing on the behavior. And I think when we do that, we miss the focus on what's that deep value? What's the rich history of that value? How did I come to believe and know that connection's really important to me? So my child acts really mean and I just feel like a horrible failure as a parent because my child was mean. Instead of stopping there, I'm a horrible parent, a horrible child, that's a dead end. So what's not a dead end is, what does that mean that's important to me? Oh, it means that kindness and giving, generosity of spirit is important to me. How did that get to be important to me? Who were the role models of that in my life? I want to live more like that. Take those role models I can think of and put pictures of them in your house. Tell stories about those people to your kids, to each other. So in other words, that rotten feeling we sometimes have is a starting point. It shows what we care passionately about. Let me see. I want to say one other thing and then have some questions and comments. And then I have a poem that I want to end with. But the one thing I want to say before we have open up for questions is, as we do this work, we may need to do some work of letting go of our resentments of our parents. Okay? And I don't mean just like suddenly, like, oh, stop resenting them, because it doesn't work that way. We might have to spell out and list and rant and rave about the way they messed up as a step along the way, but to not stop there. I think that there's been a trend that swung from our parents were perfect angels to our parents are horrible demons, and that none of that can be true, you know. That
a lot of things have brought humans off track in terms of parenting. You know, there's been a lot of war in the world, and that has an incredible impact on children and on parents. A lot of other traumas, a lot of fights for survival, a lot of people grow up under this intense cloud of racism and sexism, classism, and getting things back on track is kind of a multi-generational work. I'm not going to get it all figured out in my lifetime, you know. I'm very, very proud that my daughter, I mentioned she's in Africa, like, she was not scared to go to Africa as a young adult. Like, I would have been terrified. I never would have done that. I didn't do that. Jane Goodall was my hero when I was a young adult. But the idea to go to Africa was beyond what I could do. And here is my daughter who is doing it. So, you know, things move and it can take a, you know, generation or two. So where are you holding in regard to your parents, right? Were they perfect? Were they perfectly awful? If we hate them, then how are we going to feel about ourselves when we act like them? And if they're perfect, how do we feel about ourselves when we're not perfect? So just to open that up. So let me ask Patty to just call anybody who has a question or a comment.
Okay. There's one woman who is from Austin, and you pressed that your, you know, star 2 button a little while ago. She fell off. Yeah, press star 2 if you want to. If you have a question for Larry or a comment and want to add to the discussion here. Star 2. Okay. Oh, there you are again. All right. Good. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Beautiful. I'm really appreciating this. I just want to acknowledge that I'm doing the work. I've definitely gotten to a place of freeing up resentment from my parents and gotten to a place of acknowledging sort of the lineage that I'm embodying, especially coming through my father and kind of his what he role modeled and what I feel coming out of me, like you said, Patty, like the garbage coming out. So I'm really aware of it in like a way of lineage healing and not pointing, like seeing my father as a wounded child. But what happens to me is I get so engrossed in the immediate reaction that it's really hard to navigate to the place of pausing,
yeah,
of, you know, of comforting, of saying, wow, you know, all the suggestions. It's like I see red, and
mm-hmm.
I do, and I come to a place, it's kind of a two-part thing. I just want to say that I feel like I've had such a long desire of doing this work, and I still find myself seeing red, hitting the flatlining. And then I get to a point, too, where I'm also concerned about how often I repair with my children, that they're going to start not taking it seriously. Like when I return and I apologize or I speak about, hey, I'm working as hard as I can, I love you, was that scary for you? I'm learning to be more calm. I have a concern that they will stop taking that seriously, almost being like, oh, sorry, I always thought, you know, they're young. They're 6 and 3,
yeah,
but I just wanted to throw both those things out there.
Yes, you know, I certainly hear what you're saying, that in that moment, the emotions flood. And this is why it's really important to, as it sounds like you're doing, to talk about it, to give yourself a little dose of the feeling when your kids are not around and not vulnerable. And so you pretend to see red and scream at them with your listening partner, or if that person's not available, you know, with the teddy bear, you know, after the kids have gone to bed. And I used to have this calendar in my office of this, like, I shared an office, and it was this really pretty calendar that I never would have bought. It had like a little peach flower and a little peach on it, and I would just pretend to stomp on those peaches and stomp on those flowers and just rage. And I would end up laughing and just unloading a bit of that
anger in a situation where nobody's getting hurt by it. And then I understand that fear of, you know, you apologize so much and children are going to kind of get, desensitized to it or something. And I'm not sure what to say about that, except that, it makes a huge difference to our children when we apologize to them. And I've never seen a child like, really reject. I mean, they might reject it in the moment because they're really angry and they're not ready to apologize. They're not ready to accept your apology. But I haven't seen that be a problem where they really scorn it at a deep level. And what I would say is, if there's any way to lighten it up, this stuff gets so heavy. I think it might have been on our last call, Patty, that I was on with you, where it was you or somebody else suggested a sticker chart for the parent that the child gives a sticker for a day without yelling. And I just love that idea. It just takes something very heavy and lightens it up a little bit.
Yeah. One of the things that we suggest, actually, that you might try would be to do a little fire drill, a little mommy's mad fire drill. And what you want to do is you want to make yourself a place in your bedroom or in the garage, you know, some place that's not right out in front of God and everybody. That is the place where you go to when you're getting steaming mad. And you want to find a wall that doesn't have a picture on it and that you can pound on or slap. Or you want to find a sofa or a bed that you can pound. I know one mom who had four boys. She was widowed, and the boys were angry, and she got a plastic bat and beat her bed whenever she was just, you know, over the top. And so, but you tell your kids, okay, when I'm angry, this is what I'm going to do. Here we go. Watch me. Okay, I'm getting mad. Okay, I'm going to trot into my room. Here we go. Come with me. See what's going to happen here. And here's where I'm going to jump up and down and pound on the wall, bam, 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 bam. You know, and they're going to look, and they're going to, and then, so that's what I'm going to do when I'm angry now. So let's go back in, and let's pretend that I'm getting mad. And, you know, kids can laugh. They can, you know, you're just doing a little cartoon of yourself. And then you go in and do a little cartoon of yourself jumping up and down, a little cartoon of yourself banging on the wall or banging on the bed. And you can give them a little sign that says, "Mommy, go to your bedroom," you know. So they can pull out the little sign and tell you. Or one of my friends just wrote down the phone numbers of two good friends and gave them to her daughter when her daughter was just four and said, "Look, when I'm starting to get mad and you can see that, you know, it's really not good, you get to go call Daphne or call Andrea. Here's their numbers, really big. Let's practice calling Daphne. Let's practice calling Andrea." And then, you know, so her daughter calls up Daphne and goes, "Daphne, my mom is really mad. Would you talk to her, please?" And it makes you madder. It's like if there's somebody on the line, you've been busted. It makes you furious, but it allows you to cry hard once somebody's on the line and saying, "Oh, you're having a hard moment." And it gets you the connection with somebody that you might need. So, a couple of ideas.
I just want to underline three things I love about that. And one of them is the shift from anger to tears, that this is important step in healing often, that the anger is this just really stuck emotional place and can be a dangerous place, and it's a real emotion, but often it's keeping a lid on a more tender emotion underneath. And this is true for our children when they're hitting or screaming or kicking, that often something's wrong and they're protesting, and other times there's a tender, tender feeling that they are not willing to feel. And so it's like, "I'll make you feel it instead." And so talking to somebody can really help with that. And then the other thing I love about this mommy fire drill is that it empowers children, because our anger can really make children feel helpless. When I think about the times I felt most helpless as a child, it was when an adult was very angry. And it is a way of taking responsibility for our own feelings. I think often when we're yelling at children or punishing them harshly, we're trying to get them to change so that we don't have to feel the way we feel. We're not taking responsibility for our own feelings. We're giving somebody else the feeling instead. And to say, this is what I'm going to do when I'm really mad, and I'm going to show you, and I commit to actually doing that, and I give you these phone numbers, so I give you these tools, and that even though it's giving a job to the child, I think that that's fine, because really the essence of it is taking responsibility for your own feelings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe one more?
Yeah, there's one other person here from Portland, Maine. Go ahead. If you're from Portland, Maine, then you press star 2. It's your turn. Oops. For some reason, we lost her.
Okay. All right.
Oh, there she is. She's back.
Hi, okay. It's me from Portland.
Yeah.
Welcome. I had a question, and then I had a comment, and I think I'll start with the comment because I think the question will bring up some discussion, but the comment really dovetails on what you were saying about taking responsibility for your own feelings, and I think that I heard a quote recently. Wayne Dyer passed away, and one of the things that I was reading about him was this sentiment that when you're squeezed, what comes out is what's inside. And I think that all of us really try to hold our parenting in a way where we're really trying to embrace these concepts. But then when the rubber hits the road, we really can come up against some pretty big struggles. And, mm-hmm. and I think taking responsibility for our own emotions is such a powerful concept, because there may be some work to be done even outside the context of parenting that can help us open even bigger to, you know, being a little bit more easy when we're squeezed. And then my question is really around the listening partnerships and how are those developed, and how do we, you know, establish trust within that context? Because it seems to me like if I'm talking to somebody on the phone and I'm just sort of revealing my deepest, darkest in terms of my parenting moments, that just feels so vulnerable to me without mm-hmm. having some awareness of someone being a professional or someone having some training or something like that. And also there's a big piece of me that feels like I would be judged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to answer that,
Kay? Yeah, it is. Listening partnerships is not, it's not like making yourself a sandwich. no, it's not inviting someone over to your house for cookies. It will bring up feelings. And so it takes, I mean, what's interesting is that all the feelings that you ever had probably in junior high school about, are you acceptable? Are you okay? Does anybody want to listen to you? Are you boring? You know, what if you really told some of the stuff that, you know, has happened to you? What would people think? I don't know. We have lots of feelings buried in our past about, I probably am not okay if X, Y, and Z happened to me, which they did. So there's some way where you just have to trust that this guy won't fall if you set one up with someone. And the way you learn to do it is, we have a little booklet called Listening Partnerships for Parents. You can read that. It's, I don't know, 53-page booklet. It's got, you know, all of the, it's pretty dense. It's kind of like, you know, but it's not rocket science. It's like,
yeah.
You set it up, you say, I'm going to listen to you for 20 minutes. Tell me, you know, start the story of your life. Or you know, and then I'll start the story of my life during my 20 minutes. You know, you don't give advice, you don't butt in, you don't react, you don't gasp when the person tells you something. You trust that your respect and your caring is going to enhance their ability to think. It's not your job to think for them. You're going to enhance their own ability to think. So that's pretty simple.
And it builds, the trust builds over time.
Yeah, feelings are going to come up as you do it.
Yeah, the trust builds over time, and it's like testing ice before you skate on it, you know. You check it out, and you also coach the other person in what works best for you, what kind of listening works best. You appreciate them when they really got it right. And it's, you know, I have to say that the any dangers, like bad things happen because people share too much, it's not a significant problem, especially if you compare it to holding it all in. And I want to say we didn't get into a lot of details about, okay, what do you do when your children hit, because there's tons of fabulous information at Hand in Hand on the strategies and techniques for the what do we do when children hit. We really wanted to focus on tonight is how can we hold ourselves a little bit. And I wanted to add one more thing to the mommy's mad fire drill concept, mm-hmm. which is if we're going to be pounding pillows, pounding a wall, that can you imagine somebody with you during that time? And maybe you have somebody, a real person, flesh and blood, who's with you and who's not going to call the police and think that there's something terrible happening, that understands the emotion is flowing. But there's also in your mind, who is a person who would really get it? Who wouldn't say, oh, God, look at you. Or what's the matter with you? Or you belong in a hospital. But instead would say, oh yeah, let's go in the other room and smash some pillows against the wall. Who really, really could get that. And if you don't have anybody in your life who did that for you, to imagine, just make somebody up. That is totally fine. Just imagine somebody who you'd like to have say that to you. And because the some research on letting out anger in this way, the pounding pillows kind of thing, with children and with adults, is that if you feel totally alone doing it, you can really get sunk. But if you feel connected with someone, if you feel like, oh, I'm doing this and there's a purpose and I'm doing this so that I can get my head back together so I can be with my children, then it's a positive thing. So I just want to end with this. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to just say one more thing, which is that we also have a self-guided video course. It's about if you look at all the clips of parents doing listening with one another, it's about 8 hours, but the instruction is about 3 hours. And then there's a lot of examples, both over the phone and in-person video. So that you can get a feel for what a listening partnership is like. You can kind of get the information from, not a real person, but a video of a person. And then on Hand in Hand's discussion group, you can go on. People are asking one another questions and giving one another support over and over again all day, every day. And about 2,000 parents there now. And people often ask for listening partners there. It's still not easy. It's still not easy finding someone who's in your time zone. And you can mm-hmm. Skype with someone so that you can see who they are a little bit, spend the first hour or two with them in visual contact. Skype is not great because there is interference and it drops off sometimes. But you can begin to get to know somebody there. And it's okay if a listening partnership doesn't work out. It's like if you don't feel safe after you've tried it 4 times, you can just say, I think I'm going to move on. this isn't quite working for me. Thank you so much for trying. It's not like you're not marrying somebody to try it once or even 10 times.
Yeah.
So I think we need to close here, Larry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Last words
I'll just tell people to find this online. It's a poem by Derek Walcott, W-O-L-C-O-T-T, called Love After Love. And it's about choosing to look at yourself with love instead of not doing that. And I want to also say there's a quote, there's a movie called Junebug, which I really love this movie, and especially this one quote. This woman whose nickname was Junebug says to her brother, Jesus loves you just as you are, but he loves you too much to let you stay that way. And I think that this is this essential balance that we have where we accept ourselves and embrace ourselves. And, of course, we don't want to stay stuck in a place that isn't working and we want to move forward. And it's both. We can't get the change without the love, with our children or with ourselves.
Do you want to go ahead and read the poem?
I'll read the next bit of it. It's called Love After Love, and it's by Derek Walcott, who's from the Caribbean island of St. Lucia. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Feast on your life.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Patty, and thank you, everyone, listening.
Wow, I love listening to you. Thank you so much. You bring the love you talk about, Mary. Thank you, and thank you all for coming. And we hope we'll see you again at Hand in Hand, again and often. Take care, and thank you for all the efforts you put towards loving your children well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, good night, everyone.
Good night, all.